And we've got on the line Rodrigo Acuna. G'day, Rodrigo, how are you?
Not too bad.
Yeah. Now, the reason why we've got you here is because you have made a film called Venezuela, The Cost of Challenging an Empire. And I must say, it is a perfect time for such a film to be screening on December the 6th for the local audience. Can you tell us your journey for making this film?
Oh, I've been travelling to Venezuela for many years now. I've got a PhD on the subject of Venezuelan foreign policy. And I've travelled to the country several times, and so many of the things that I've seen, I've always wanted to capture on camera, not just write about them in academic articles or media articles, but also actually capture them on film. So I teamed up together with a journalist called Nicholas Ford, and I put forward the idea of putting together a small independent film, and he agreed, and we managed to get to Venezuela and do filming for about 3 weeks, maybe a month we were there in 2021. And then when we came back to Australia, we proceeded to edit all of the footage. And 2 years and 8 months later, we had a small documentary, which we presented last year at the New South Wales Teachers Federation and a few other places here in Sydney and in Brisbane. And we've been trying to get the film to Melbourne for a while now. But all sorts of things have happened. But we are now going to present the film in Melbourne on the 6th of December at the Wildflower Picture House and Bar in Fitzroy North. So
it's actually a very nice little venue, I'll have to say. I've been there before and it's very comfortable.
We've been talking a bit on the show about the importance of writing and poetry and artistic expression as a part of, the kind of Palestinian experience. Could you talk a bit about why, for you, film as a medium has been such an important part of telling this story, as you just said, above and beyond, for instance, academic publications?
I think there's a situation with visual imagery that people find much more believable, or it has an impact on them. And although I don't, I'm not a filmmaker, I haven't been doing this for a long time, I certainly do understand how people perceive information and how to put that information mm-hmm. together. And I can tell you that the majority of mainstream media coverage on Venezuela has often, for a very long time, been highly inaccurate. There was recently a report on 60 Minutes USA on Venezuela, and presented the country in a sort of standard way that it's a repressive regime. People are just waiting for a U.S. invasion or some sort of U.S. attack to overthrow the government. And the situation is actually much more complex on the ground. The government for a very long time has had easily about 50%, maybe, statistics vary depending on the elections. Sometimes it's about 40, sometimes it's about 50%. But there's a noticeable percentage of the population which has long supported its political programs and its projects. And to just simply ignore them is just unacceptable in my view. And there's also the situation of the violence. If you have a look at who has perpetrated the majority of the violence in the last 20 or so years in the country, or pushed for a political crisis to take place, when you break down the actual figures of the victims, the majority have always come from the political right, the ones that are pushing for the violence. And the people that are actually experiencing the violence and having family members killed are just poor working-class Venezuelans, often Afro-Venezuelans. And because they don't have access to the mainstream media, because they don't have access to CNN in Spanish, they're often ignored. So that's what I try to do in my documentary, is tell some of their stories as well, and
as you've kind of just mentioned, there's obviously a big difference between how a lot of these things are discussed, particularly in American contexts and media, compared to experiences on the ground in Venezuela. And as we were preparing for this interview, I was having a look at some of the academic coverage of sanctions in Venezuela, and a lot of the American analysis emphasizes sanctions as a diplomatic approach to political change. And I've got a quote from a Georgetown Journal of International Affairs article that describes the intention of sanctions to be, sorry, not sanctions, but exemptions for resource access for companies like Chevron, as intended as diplomatic tools to promote, quote, diplomatic reforms. So there's a lot of framing of sanctions and access for specific US and foreign companies as diplomatic and democratic. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you feel that compares to what you're observing on the ground?
Well, it's that's a nice language to utilize, which is going to promote US foreign policy. But the reality is, one, the US has long done this towards Latin American countries or governments that have defied its interest in the region. They've long used economic sanctions to hurt and to put pressure on governments. They did that with the Allende government in Chile in the 1970s. They did that with the Sandinista government in the 1980s in Nicaragua. And the other thing is that the sanctions actually just hurt average people. That's who they actually hurt. So take, for example, medicines for people that have diabetes. A lot of people in Venezuela have actually died because they can't get access to insulin because of U.S. economic sanctions. So that is something that is not discussed in the mainstream media. And the number of Venezuelans that have died, totally unnecessarily, it's into the thousands. It's absolutely appalling that they should be struggling to purchase medications on the international markets because of the sanctions that that the U.S. government has imposed on.
Well, it's this also this really cynical kind of like we care for the Venezuelan people, but not enough to care about what the cost of actual sanctions are, which are well documented, right from Iraq onwards. I'm sort of interested on. I'm really interested to see the movie when it gets here, but also what the feeling is like in Venezuela towards U.S. foreign policy. Like, are people preparing? People are ready to for an eventual confrontation, or what's the feeling on the ground?
Well, the people that I've spoken to in Venezuela from here in Australia, they are certainly preparing for a confrontation. And there's I published an article in a magazine called Truth Out in the US only a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, and I noted that the Chavistas, the pro-government supporters, they're going to fight very, very hard. So while the United States, the Trump administration, if it does decide to carry out a full military strike to decapitate the Maduro government, they may be able to achieve that in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, once they have to put boots on the ground, and they will have to put boots on the ground because unless they are able to get a section of the Venezuelan military to carry out a coup against the government, they are going to have to put boots on the ground. Once that occurs, they're still going to be faced with a situation of a significant section of the population which still supports the government. And they know what is going to happen to them. They know that once their government is overthrown, a very bloody US-backed dictatorship is going to have to be imposed. So a lot of people are preparing for a fight, and a lot of people are obviously scared, they're worried, they're anxious. A lot of things on the ground are still continuing as normal. So there were some images coming out of a baseball game, and people were just, you know, going to a baseball game. Inflation hasn't skyrocketed. The economy's actually been doing well for the last 17 quarters, and they've managed to resolve a lot of problems that were systemic to just the Venezuelan economic model for decades. And I think that's also something that the United States has never, ever wanted to see a progressive government achieve in Latin America, is to actually have economic success. They can have, some level of political success, but when they start having economic success, that's always going to be a problem for U.S. interests, because then other Latin American countries and lower working class people are going to look towards their government and say, well, why can't we have similar policies in our country? Why can't we have a government like the one in Venezuela, which has built, the numbers are just absolutely amazing. And even if you sort of half them, the government has claimed it's built, I think, something like 2.5 or 3 million homes in the last 20 years. And you can see that when you travel to Venezuela, you will see government programs where houses and apartment blocks are being built for working class Venezuelans to move into large government housing project. You can see schools being built, you can see hospitals being built, and again, this is just all generally in the mainstream media, with a few honourable exceptions. It's always generally ignored.
It's funny because on my way here to the station, for some reason or other, I kept thinking about this term hierarchy of greed. And then I realised it's actually supposed to be the hierarchy of need. But it's a Maslow's theory of hierarchy of need. But in actual fact, it's the hierarchy of greed that the Americans are spitting out towards the Venezuelans, but also even the passing on of the so-called Peace Prize to the right-wing
Machado
is we're experiencing the upper echelons propaganda mechanisms at high speed, aren't we, in relation to Venezuela?
Of course. I mean, that the handing out of the Peace Prize was just absolutely disgusting. If you take into consideration the fact that Rigoberta Menchú, an indigenous woman from Guatemala in the early 1990s, I think, received the Nobel Peace Prize, and to my knowledge, she was the only one that received the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, that in itself is disgusting, considering the large number of horrific, absolutely brutal U.S.-backed dictatorships that took place in the region, and the number of women that, with enormous amount of courage, fought against them. To only recognize one woman, that in itself is something I sharply disagree with. But then to come along and award the prize to a woman who participated, a politician who participated in the 2002 coup against President Chavez, who was himself kidnapped, a person who has received millions of dollars from U.S. funding, a person who is clearly putting the interests of her own small elite economic class and the interest of U.S. multinationals ahead of her entire, ahead of the entire population is revolting, because the consequences of a full-scale U.S. military attack are going to be horrific upon the Venezuelan people. There are going to be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that are going to die unnecessarily. So to award her such a prize is just disgusting.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You wanted to say something, Anila?
Well, I think for me, something else I'd really be interested to hear about is how, for you, this fits into America's broader foreign policy goals. The film obviously is called The Cost of Challenging an Empire, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about how, particularly sanctions, but obviously the escalations in the region recently are not an isolated incident. It's part of a broader kind of project of empire. And before I shut up and let you talk, I thought it would be really worthwhile to mention that there's been a study from The Lancet journal this year that's reported that US and EU sanctions have killed 38 million people since 1970. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, the stakes are high. Sanctions are not, they're not diplomacy, they're violent. Anyway, go on.
Well, that's right. I mean, and again, they're the objective is to overthrow a government that is not following the Washington consensus. And in Latin America, we have a long history and a long understanding of that. Economic sanctions were placed on the Allende government in the 1970s, early 1970s, with the objective of having the population turn against the government. And that's just has been the same situation with Cuba. Cuba's been heavily sanctioned for over 60 years now. And we have U.S. government officials saying explicitly that the objective is there's no food on the supermarkets, and that people will eventually turn on their government. And the same has been the objective with Venezuela. The difference is that because Venezuela has oil, and because we are living in a post-Cold War world where Venezuela can negotiate deals with China, with Russia, with Iran, with Turkey, they've been able to survive and at times even prosper. But that the sanctions have had an enormous cost, that they are violent, and that they have the sole intention of having people rise up against their own government. That's quite clear, and it's a story that has unfortunately repeated itself again and again. I say at the beginning of the film, this is the old story of the United States and local elites being completely incapable of coming to terms with having a progressive government in power.
Well, we remind people that Venezuela, the cost of challenging an empire, is going to be shown at 318 St. George's Road, Fitzroy. It's called the Wildflower Picture House. It's just up near Peter Monty's, in fact, if you know the area. So 318 St. George's Road, and it's going to be on 6 p.m. on Saturday, December the 6th. It costs $20 or $15 concession, and the funds go to the film production costs. And more strength to your arm, Rodrigo. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.